FM News Talk 97.1 podcast.
Well, the president out front there on the immigration thing. Glad to hear it. Way to go, Donald Trump. Kind of moving on. Everyone else is focused on these reports yesterday. These, oh my God, great Odin's Raven. Yesterday that the meeting at Trump Tower, did you see that? Everybody's focused on this this congressional testimony about the meeting at Trump Tower where Don Trump Jr. met with this Russian just for the sole purpose of digging up dirt on Hillary Clinton. They're all shocked over that, right? and then at the end they admit, well, the meeting really didn't amount to anything and he didn't find out any information. But his intentions were bad.
I like how he's like shamelessly like, my intentions were bad. He's like, I got there and it was boring. Sorry.
Meanwhile,
nothing to see here.
Yeah. Meanwhile, what we know is a fact is that Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee spent $6 million to dig up this fake steel dossier, and that gets ignored by the mainstream media. This is headline news tomorrow about yesterday about the Senate hearing and the testimony that he gave. And they ignore the fact that the Democrats spent $6 million to dig up dirt on Donald Trump.
Well, it doesn't fit the narrative, Mark. Come on.
Some days I just want to give up. You reach that point where you just want to give up. So. We're going to talk about this more later today, but folks, the quality of journalism locally has been headed downhill for a while now. Most notably in 2012 when I left. I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
but it took the Los Angeles Times to break the story today over our local reporters that Al Watkins now claims the $120,000 that was dropped off at his office by Scott Faughn actually came from a high-ranking GOP donor who hates Eric Greitens. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
We need some serious music there.
I thought he didn't know where it was coming from.
Well, thank you.
Isn't that what he's said?
Yeah, but he's known all along where the money came from.
Now, can he get in trouble for that now?
He should.
I mean, I agree. I mean, if he knew the whole time and he's on the steps of, you know, the courthouse all the time going, I don't know where it came from.
Now the LA Times article, there's an LA Times article out today that, and I put it up on the Facebook page. There's an LA Times article that claims that he not only did Scott Faughn told him, he claims Scott Faughn told him that the money came from a high-ranking GOP donor who had a personal vendetta against Eric Greitens. Of course, he doesn't name names,
right. Mm-hmm.
Which completely contradicts what Scott Faughn says, the money was his personally. And now Watkins claims in this article that he took photos of the money and forwarded it to the FBI before he went and deposited it in his trust account.
What? I'm confused because money went up 20 grand since I heard about it.
Click, click. If somebody drops off 100 grand at my house and I take a picture of it and then I put it in my bank, does that make it okay?
Yes.
I mean, that's like a chicken and egg guy.
Legitimizes it. Nice job, Mr. Watkins.
You know, I mean, the guy has, let's face it, Al Watkins has zero credibility these days because of the conflicting stories that he's told on this case. Yet, this rings true, and the possibility seems very good that what he's saying is true, because we know that if you follow the money, I would challenge you to read the article. If you don't do anything else today, go to the webpage, the Facebook page, the Mark Cox Show on Facebook. There's a link to this LA Times article. Read it because it's pretty fascinating, particularly the point that, of course, I'm proud of this, but that I've been saying all along is that you have to follow the money. Eric Greitens tried to end the state's lucrative tax credit for building low-income housing. The program has brought millions of dollars in profits to developers. But the governor argued it was inefficient. And he hacked off a lot of people that were making millions of dollars off that program. And it points out correctly that the person that would succeed him, Mike Parson, is a supporter of that program. You just have to follow the money. I've been saying that from the day after Channel 4 broke the story. What could possibly be, who's funding this? And everybody said, how dare you suggest that this poor, embittered ex-husband has anything to gain from this? Well, I don't know if he personally gained or not, but I know one thing. It was the beginning of the end of Eric Greitens' political career. It was.
It needed to be brought out to launch the rest of this.
Even though that trial, that portion of the original trial has ended now, and the charges were drawn, they haven't given up, and it'll be the other charges that will likely bring an impeachment hearing, which we got Bob Onder to confirm yesterday, and they everyone in Jeff City believes that this special session will end with an impeachment by the House and some sort of vote by the Senate on impeachment. It seems to be a foregone conclusion. Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever find out the name of that big GOP donor? Do you think they
I think so.
Yeah. You think it's coming?
And I hope whoever it is gets a big scarlet letter hung around their neck afterwards, although I doubt it.
Are there any laws broken there? Are you allowed to do that when it's...
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. But here, I mean, I guess you could pay anybody $100,000 if you really wanted to. But this is the funniest part of this whole thing. You know, Scott Faughn used to be the mayor of Poplar Bluff, and he ended up getting charged with writing bad checks or writing checks improperly or something.
And he
left. Right in 2007. Scott Faughn did an interview with a TV station in Cape Girardeau, KFVS, I think it is Channel 12. This was his quote to this television station. In my community, if you are rich enough, if you're a powerful enough attorney and a powerful enough newspaper publisher and corrupt enough, you can take out just about anybody, end quote. That was from 2007 from Scott Faughn, who's now involved in the same crap against Eric Greitens.
Yeah.
It's a sad state that we live in and a sad state of affairs. I'll get to your phone calls here, Kevin. Hang on. 314-241-9797. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. Here is our national anthem.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
The Democrats gave us that law. It's a horrible thing. We have to break up families. The Democrats gave us that law, and they don't want to do anything about it. They'll leave it like that because they don't want to make any changes. And now you're breaking up families because of the Democrats. It's terrible.
Woo! Are they hot? They can't believe the President of the United States would suggest that they're responsible for breaking up the family. I have to tell you, I've gotten... I've gotten on the mailing list for some group that is some pro-illegal immigration group, and it is funny to read some of these emails that come in, because now that I'm on it, I don't want them to stop sending it to me, because it gives you an idea to see what the talking points are for the people on the left. And they're all emails. It's something called America's Voice. And they're all emails. I'm looking at it right now. Talking about how the Trump administration rips apart families. Primary voters reject pro-Trump candidates incompetence and cruelty, DHS Secretary Nielsen tries to defend the indefensible when you separate parents and children. I mean, it you can just go through here and see the left-wing journalists across the country getting these emails and saying, oh, there's a good talking point. I mean, because you hear it repeated in their stories all the time. Like when they embedded a reporter with that caravan coming up from Central America. So we're to believe that these people are dirt poor. They're coming from a war-torn country or they're in fear of their lives. But they're riding on air-conditioned motor coaches that are much nicer than anything that pulls into the Greyhound station down here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Follow the money. That's all I'm saying.
Theme this morning.
Yeah. Anyway, that's so true and just so much of what we talk about. Hey, Wes, thanks for calling the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just like to say that the biggest threat to our democracy is crony capitalism. This big Republican donor is coming after Greitens. That's all it's about. He wants his government check just like somebody who's on welfare or who's getting food stamps. This is, if they can do this to Greitens, they can do it to anybody.
Yeah.
And I challenge you, Mark, very few of us ever get to fight the good fight. Fight for Greitens, because this is a big danger to our democracy here in this state. And every Republican who votes for impeachment ought to be primaried by a conservative. And all they've got to do is just talk about how the crony capitalism got Greitens. Every one of them should be run out of office. I know that if my rep votes for impeachment, I'm going to get involved.
Wes, I tell you what, I appreciate you bringing that up, and hang on, because tomorrow morning we've got an interview with a state legislator who is calling out what he sees as a group in Jeff City with horse blinders on for impeachment of this governor. Republicans in Jeff City.
Mark, where's he from? Because I'm from KC.
He's from the greater St. Louis region. I'm going to let him speak for himself tomorrow when I put him on the air.
I'll listen to you guys on the internet.
Okay. Yeah, we don't have him scheduled yet, do we, time-wise? I mean, I know he's going to be on in the morning. What time do we talk about?
We discussed the 6 o'clock hour, but it may be a little bit
later.
Yeah,
it may either be 6 or 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Yeah.
Everybody who's a conservative has got to listen to this guy, and if your representative votes for impeachment, they've got to go.
Wes,
it's not the Democrats, it's the Republicans.
I appreciate you listening, my friend. I got to run to a break here. Thank you. All right. Kevin, Mickey, hold the line. When we come back, we're also going to talk to Genevieve Wood from the Heritage Foundation. But, some breaking news for you tomorrow right here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Genevieve, how are you?
Good morning, Mark. I'm doing well. You know, Bob Schieffer was a Texan.
Oh, he was from Texas.
Yes,
yeah. Loved Bob.
Yes,
he was just a great guy, just so easy to talk to. Kind of had that disarming manner from Texas.
That's right. And I guess we should say Israel. I don't think I think he's still alive.
I meant from his retirement. I didn't mean that he had died or anything. But
I just realized I'm talking about him in the past tense, like he's no longer here. But anyway.
Yeah, Bob was great. I loved having him in on the show years ago. That was fantastic. So I had to ask because this North Korean thing that the story that's broken since yesterday that, oh, watch out. You know, it looks like North Korea may be threatening to back out of this. Is anybody really surprised that there wasn't a bump or two in the road before this summit took place?
Well, if they are, then they haven't even been paying attention. They have no idea of history, or they're just wanting to make light of something. I mean, look, of course there's going to be bumps in the road. I still think it's very likely you're going to have a summit on June 12th, which is much closer than we've gotten in years to having any kind of progress in terms of not just having talks, but having talks that actually go the direction the United States would like to see it go. But of course, I mean, look, Kim Jong-un, he may be someone who's willing to talk, but let's not forget, this is somebody who for years, and through his family's history. His father was the leader of North Korea. It's been all about him, and it's been all about North Korea. He's not going to give that up easily. He's not going to denuclearize easily. He's going to make this very hard for us to have progress. I think people should realize this isn't going to be easy, and if we do end up getting a peace on the Korean Peninsula, the Trump administration will deserve a heck of a lot of credit, because it's not going to be an easy task.
Well, no, it's not. And the thing about Kim Jong-un that I've said all along is, I mean, you talk about dealing with somebody who's got a little bit of, disorder going on there. It's almost like dealing with somebody with a split personality. I'm surprised that it's gone as smoothly as it has up until now, but I've been very suspicious of what his motives are here. Because his dad and his grandfather did the same thing. They would talk a good game to get somebody to ease up on sanctions, and then they'd go right back to the same crazy talk.
No, that's right. Look, I think the only reason he's even coming close is because the sanctions have been tough, and they have made it tougher and tougher for North Korea to survive. I mean, let's be real. This is a man, and as you rightly point out, his family history of starving their own people to use the money they have to build up an arsenal and to build up a ballistic missile program and the like. So this is what's been going on for years, but the sanctions have increasingly, especially under the Trump administration, have been getting tougher. And I think they're worried that China is listening to the Trump administration more than they have in the past in terms of dealing with U.S. presidencies. And they're worried, what if China ups its sanctions? If they do, there's no way North Korea, the regime, can survive. So I think the only reason he's coming to the table is he's being pushed to it. He still has, I'm sure, a number of tricks in his pocket, but if we can keep pushing and we can keep China on track to come alongside us, it could have huge repercussions for this deal.
Yeah, we're talking to Genevieve Wood from the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. You can follow her on Twitter, at Genevieve Wood. I watched what happened in Israel this week with just complete joy, because so many past presidents have talked a good game on moving the embassy. Donald Trump came in and did what he told us he would do, and the mainstream media coverage on this has totally focused on the Palestinian protests. I've got a friend who lives in Jerusalem. He said it was a completely peaceful day, sunny, beautiful day. And if you lived in Jerusalem, you didn't know that it was any different than any other day.
That's right. Well, look, they want to focus on the Gaza Strip, which, you know, has its problems from time to time.
Right.
There's not going to be no doubt about it. But the people causing the problems are Hamas, a terrorist organization, not just recognized by us, not just recognized by Israel, recognized by the European Union. But yet you still now have, you know, the Daily Caller. I don't know if you saw that newspaper, or no, it was the Daily News out of New York, came out and had a picture of Ivanka on one side smiling, and on the other side, some of the Hamas terrorists getting killed, which is what terrorists sometimes tend to do.
Yeah.
And saying, like, how out of touch she is. She's smiling as all this horror is going on. It's like, no, the majority of that country and the majority of the world looking at this, it is very peaceful. You had that one area that you had terrorist activity going on, and that wasn't her fault. That wasn't the Trump administration's fault. That was the Palestinian terrorist organization's fault.
Yeah.
And they've been doing this long before we moved the embassy. I don't know if, again, it's like, did the people just wake up? This has been a problem for decades.
CBS News
yesterday
sent a reporter to a hospital in Gaza where somebody was being treated for a gunshot wound to the leg, and the whole story focused on whether this guy would walk again, when I thought the whole story probably should have focused on what if he'd been at home watching TV instead of trying to storm the border. He might not
exactly have
a bullet in his leg.
Exactly. Look, the media cannot stand, and I don't even think, honestly, Mark, I don't even think it's so much about the embassy moving. It's another win, a foreign policy win for the administration, and they can't stand it.
Yeah.
As you rightly pointed out, Bill Clinton called for this, George W. Bush called for this, Barack Obama called for this. Under Bill Clinton, Congress in 1995 passed an act saying that we would be moving the embassy, okay? So all these Republicans and Democrats have called for this, but Trump is finally the one who did it. Now it's a victory, and they can't stand it.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. One more thing. Trump, he does what he says he's going to do. Generally speaking, he has. And then he moves on to the next thing, like drug prices. I mean, he's moved on, but the media is still hung up on this. But it's a great point. Listen, Genevieve, I know you've got to run. I appreciate your time, as usual. Heritage.org, at Genevieve Wood. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Chelsea Clinton in case you didn't recognize the voice, because we don't hear her voice a whole lot, and not enough for it to be nails on a chalkboard like her mother. But she's what she said in a nutshell is that her mother believes that the sinking, failing experiment that was Obamacare should be yet expanded to include illegal aliens, to include people who are not citizens of the United States. Remember, Obamacare only works if you don't, right? So it only works if you don't have a job and you're getting subsidized to either reduce the cost to yourself to zero or very little. If you have to pay the full price for it, you can't afford it in most cases. But she wants to give that to people who are here illegally. Honestly, folks, if you are somebody who considers yourself a Democrat, you need to let that absorb into your the thinking portions of your brain that are left. Think of what that would do to healthcare expenses in this country if the 46 or 47% of us who work, in addition to having to support the 53% that don't, also had to provide healthcare for the tens of millions of people who've kicked in our front door and broken into the country. Just think about it. That's all I'm saying. Let me get to Kevin, who's been holding on for a long time. Kevin, good morning.
Morning, Mark. It's good hearing your voice again.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, Mark, I want to answer a question that you had this morning about who is supplying this money. Well, we know who is supplying this money. We've known who was supplying this money for 2 months now.
In the Greitens case.
In the Greitens case, all this $110,000, $20,000 is going out, and it's the weasel. And you know who the weasel is. He ran against Greitens, and he was picked out, and you, everybody knows who the weasel is. But the
really?
Yeah,
you don't really think that's who did this, do you?
Well, you want me to bet $100 on it to you, Mark, and we'll collect some time?
Yeah, I would. I'd almost be willing to take that bet. You're not suggesting, let's just go ahead and name names here. You're not suggesting that it was somebody like John Bruner, are you?
I am absolutely betting $100 on it.
I don't believe that.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good. That's fine, because I know there's a lot of other things going on. He is a nasty little man right now. But what I was going to say, Mark, is that this committee that's been formed, these people will not, and they're absolutely refusing to change any rules to give Greitens' attorneys a chance to prove him being innocent and upright. And I'll tell you why. You said follow the money. Well, let me tell you what these guys have been promised. For one, your caller prior to this was pretty ticked off and wants to go after these people and not reelect them. Well, these people on a committee aren't going to be serving the public anymore because they're not up for reelection. That's one thing. And two, your lieutenant governor, and behind closed doors, is throwing the bones, and they're dividing up who's going to be the lobbyist and who's going to get appointments and all this crazy stuff. The word is in Jefferson City that he's literally measuring the windows in the mansion for new curtains. But these people, Mark, these people are just the most corrupt group, and I can't believe it, because my personal knowledge and experience with these people would have never, ever thought that they were doing this. But you follow the money, Mark, and they're out. You know what it's like? I'll tell you exactly what it's like. It's like when they were throwing bones when they were dividing up Jesus' personal belongings. Remember they were throwing bones, and they were wanting to get his covering, his vest. It didn't have any seams in it. That's exactly what this is like. They're throwing bones and trying to divide up what they can in their own pocket.
All right. Well, Kevin, here's the thing. The LA Times put this story out there. I can't believe that we're not going to find out at some point who it is. But if it ends up that you're right, I'm going to buy you at least breakfast. How about that?
All right.
Because I don't think that's who it is, but I don't. But we'll see. I appreciate the call, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Yep. I mentioned this a little earlier, but tomorrow we're going to have somebody on the radio here who's addressing what's going on in Jeff City. He's part of what's going on down there in terms of being an elected official, but he's also at the same time a little tired of what's going on down there, and is going to push back on it a little bit because there are people in Jefferson City who've reached the conclusion that there are a core group of people who are pushing forward for impeachment no matter what. And what Kevin was referring to there is the fact that the governor's, up until this point in this investigation, let's face it, his own people haven't had the opportunity to go give their point of view on this case. Mm-hmm. Because of the pending criminal trial, they didn't want to give anything up that could be turned around and used in the criminal trial. I'm just saying, in terms of defending themselves, they didn't want to give away their game plan for the defense. Now that that's over with, they should be able to go into a hearing or say even behind closed doors with this committee and defend their position in this case. It's not clear yet that's going to happen because they kind of have moved on to the issues they think will be grounds for impeachment. That's the key here. They can't impeach him on the possibility that a photo might or might not have existed. They pushed those salacious details out to damage his reputation. Now they're moving forward on how did he acquire the donor list, and were any laws violated that would fit the definition of impeachment, the reasons for impeachment. That's what's going on down in Jeff City right now. So we'll talk more about it. We're going to have that guest on tomorrow, and we'll figure out the time, hopefully before the end of the show today, but probably in the 6 or 7 a.m. hour tomorrow. You know who else we're going to have on tomorrow? I'm Jason Church. Jason Church is last week at FM News Talk 97.1. Mm-hmm. He's moving on to bigger and better things. We're thrilled for him. Not a better guy in the building, in my opinion. He's just a good individual.
Yep.
And we're all going to miss him a lot. Got to go have a cocktail with him last night at a little going away gathering. Posted a picture of that on Facebook, in fact, the Mark Cox Show on Facebook. We're going to get Jason on here tomorrow morning to talk about it. So hats off to you, Jason. We're going to be back with more of the Mark Cox Morning Show right after this.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Maybe this is because we work at a radio station where the radio is like in our head all the time. Mm-hmm. Like either I'm in the car listening to FM News Talk 97.1, or I've got cans on my head, earphones, where I'm constantly listening to 97.1. We're running this Goodwill commercial right now with the dude whose old rock concert t-shirt is still hanging in his closet. Have you heard this?
Yeah. I think of you every time.
Thank you.
Every single
thought,
time.
These people that I work with must think that this is Mark Cox's
just
t-shirt.
For you. Well, it's funny because I thought too, like when you started radio full time, I'm like, he got to bust those out and start wearing them every day. Like,
yeah. AC/DC, the Van Halen. I've got all of my old rock concert t-shirts.
Making up for lost time of not being able to wear them on TV.
If you haven't heard the spot, you will eventually, but the guy's like, he just going on, hey, dude, this is your old rock t-shirt. You haven't worn me. I know you're retired, but I still got a lot of life. You should donate me to Goodwill. I got a lot of those that are probably screaming in the back of my closet somewhere.
Well, and I thought about Michelle's friend that made the quilt with the t-shirts that she wasn't supposed to make. I was like, don't donate them. Don't make quilts. Keep them. Like, don't do anything with those t-shirts.
I know. Yeah, very true. Hey, anyway, glad you're with us this morning. I promise you what this show is going to be today, tomorrow, and even Monday and Tuesday of next week. It is going to be royal wedding news free.
Yes.
Because nobody here cares. We're getting text alerts on our phones from CNN and all these networks with breaking news on who is or isn't attending this event, and I could care less.
Yeah, I got a news alert that the dad is not officially not attending.
Who cares?
I don't care.
I don't care. I just don't. So anyway, I just want to promise you that.
I guess
that
we're the minority. I don't know, but I'm glad we're all together in it.
We're all together. Just stay tuned, and you won't have to suffer through that stuff here on the Mark Cox Show. Hey, got a lot coming up for you today. We're going to talk to Senator Jim Talent in the next hour. We've got Jack Devine on a little later this morning. He's a veteran of the CIA. Talking about some of this stuff going on with Gina Haspel and her confirmation hearing. So we're going to get to all of that and more in just a minute. But first, I want you to listen to this.
Honestly, my takeaway when all of this was going on is that someone has information on our opponent. You know, things are going a million miles an hour. You know what it's like to be on a campaign. We just won Indiana, but we're talking about a contested convention. Things are going a million miles an hour again. And, hey, wait a minute. I've heard about all these things, but maybe this is something. I should hear him out.
My guest is, that of course was Don Trump Jr., but my guest this morning is Kamara Clifton, who is a political strategist with the Clifton Network Partners. And we're talking about these transcripts that have been released by the Senate Judiciary Committee on this big meeting between Don Trump Jr. and this Russian lawyer last year, this 1,800 pages. Kamara, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on. You know, I'm thinking to myself, I always thought this was much ado about nothing. Did we learn anything new yesterday about this meeting?
No. And actually, you know, Mark, you were spot on from the beginning. It is much ado about nothing. It was a perfect distraction for desperate Democrats. And it's now that the documents have made public, everybody can read and make sure for themselves, but there's nothing to report. You know, there's a lot to talk about collusion with Russia, but the focus is in the wrong place. It's not collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian operatives. It's probably more seriously collusion between Mark Zuckerberg and the Russians, and also Hillary Clinton and the Russians. But you never hear much about that because that's not the talking points that the left wants us to have.
Well, the thing that amazes me is that the focus is on a solicited meeting that Don Trump Jr. decided to take along with some other top members of the campaign, under the impression that this individual had some story that needed to get out about the Hillary Clinton. They didn't pay for the meeting. They wanted to hear what the woman had to say. That all seems legitimate to me, even though the left is slack-jawed over it. And at the same time, we know as a fact that the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC paid something on the level of $6 million to a law firm to do opposition research that resulted in the Steele dossier. Why is that not a much bigger deal?
Because the media is not controlled by the fourth estate like you are. You are only interested in telling your audience and sharing with the world the fact is we know them. The rest of the media, mostly called mainstream, has no interest in that. They are into shaping public opinion by, you know, convolution and missteps and misrepresentation and harsh talking points. That's really the reason that this just drags on, because they don't, I mean, think about what else do they really have to talk about? And when you think about that meeting, and you hit it right on with the oppositional research, there's not a campaign from city manager, or not, they're usually hired, a mayor, all the way to the White House, that doesn't do oppositional research on their opponents. Everyone does it, no matter what side of the aisle you sit on. So it wasn't an unusual thing for the Trump operatives to take a meeting like that, but the reality is nothing came of it, nothing was committed to, and to your point, nothing was paid for, and so it should have been like a five-minute thing in terms of media coverage, and we've just celebrated the one-year anniversary of this.
Yeah. And where does it end? I heard Rudy Giuliani say, you know what, bring it on. You've had 12 months. Issue your report. We'll challenge it if we need to, but it's time to bring this to a conclusion.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that he's working now with the administration in an official capacity, because you know, people of a certain age probably will not remember him this way, but I remember him as always looking for truth and justice in everything, and even when it was unpopular. And that was when he was a state's attorney, and that was when he was, you know, mayor and all the roles that he's had.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's time now focusing on what really matters. What really matters is that we're taking action against Venezuela. What really matters is that we're trying to solve some problems in the Pacific, especially on the Korean Peninsula, that have not been resolved for 70 years.
Yeah.
We're moving, we moved to Israel, we moved our embassy to the official city in Israel, where it should have been since 1948. Those are the things that matter in the world. At home, of course, everybody knows the good news that's going on here, but who's talking about it? You.
Yeah, that's so, right.
You know, hey, this is important.
Kamara Clifton, listen, I appreciate your time. Is there somewhere where people can go to learn more about you?
You know, I love it when they email me because it's a more direct relationship. I'll give you my email address, and,
sure.
And I take all emails very seriously, and I always respond. It's CAMARA.C.CLIFTON@gmail.com.
Kamara C. Clifton at gmail.com. Listen, I appreciate your time.
God bless you.
Yep, you too.
Good work.
Thank you very much for your time this morning. Boy, she is spot on. The Donald Trump thing, the Don Trump Jr. thing took on added significance for one reason, because the woman he met with's name was like Natasha or something, remember?
Now on to the hardest part of in this plan.
And that is?
We're going to take Washington.
Darling, that's not hard.
No.
Look at headline.
Boston takes Washington 7-2.
Anybody can take Washington.
Thank you. It's Boris and Natasha. That must be it. All right, you're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. More to come after this. 314-241-9797.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
I'm going to see my friend Jason Church at his sort of going away party last night down at that Chevy's on Olive there near the Innerbelt.
Uh-huh. That's a nice Chevy's. Oh, yeah.
It was beautiful. They really they've really updated that place. It looks like a Quonset hut from the outside, but it's really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't say much for the service we received, but for the most part, it was very well done. Sorry, but I'm just being honest.
Well, I mean, the service just was not existent. At one point, they just said, we're not going to wait on you
anymore. Just go to the bar.
Okay,
that's fine. Which didn't bother us, but I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
You can
bring the music down now. I'm just saying. I was jamming to some Van Halen and AC/DC on the way out there.
You could have picked me up on the way or something.
Well, I could have if you just said. I didn't know you were going. I went right down past your house, apparently.
I know.
It's fantastic. So, yeah. Goodbye to Jason Church. We're going to have him on the show tomorrow. We're going to miss that guy around here.
Yeah.
But we're so happy for him because he's moving on for a better opportunity. And I think he's going to be over at SIUE.
WSIE. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I started. I used to do the news in the mornings there.
Can you imagine the voice? Good morning. I'm Jason Church.
I wonder how many people in St. Louis, Tracy Ellis and I were talking about this last night, when Jason comes on to do his newscast, how many people all in their car at the same
mouth
time
it. Are, I'm Jason Church. I can't even get that low unless I have a cold.
No.
If I have a cold, I can almost emulate Jason Church, but not quite. Now, we're going to have to get that drop before he leaves. I'm Jason Church. Anyway, good for Jace. We're going to miss him around here. Tomorrow's his last day. We'll get him on the show tomorrow in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get to more of your phone calls coming up. We've got former Senator Jim Talent at the top of the hour. 314-241-9797. What say you?
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
I hear net neutrality, and I hear that.
Do your eyes gloss over? Really, the whole idea. You know what? It's a confusing issue for a lot of people.
It is.
It is for people in the industry. When I was doing the noon to three show, I would get in an hour long debate with people on both sides of this who are passionate that we must have net neutrality. It's just not fair. And I'm like, listen, folks. The internet, besides Al Gore, who apparently created it, the internet functioned just fine for a lot of years, just like Apple and all these phone companies, IBM, all of them that produced a product that people wanted. And those products were priced at different levels based on what you wanted to buy. In my opinion, the net neutrality effort to begin with was an attempt to socialize the internet, as opposed to keeping it the capitalist system that it's been, which was serving everybody just fine. And now suddenly the fact that a Republican group got in charge of the committee and changed in the FCC, changed from net neutrality, which was introduced under the Obama administration, they act like you've chopped somebody's head off, that you're depriving people of this and depriving people of that. And it's just not the case. So for those of you who missed it, if you're like Denise and you like shiny object, squirrel ran by because you hear the word net neutrality and you kind of tune out. Just so you know, yesterday the Senate, the United States Senate, which Republicans technically still control, the United States Senate voted to reinstate net neutrality. Because all 49 Democrats on a straight party line vote, plus three rhinos, voted for it. Susan Collins, you know who they are. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, two of them, and John Kennedy of Louisiana was the other one, who joined the 49 Democrats to pass the bill 52-47. Well, it requires internet service providers to treat all web traffic equally. Really? So this is the thing about it for people to get on and argue about this. What's the difference today from when net neutrality was in effect? Nothing. Internet provider might choose to discriminate against me because I game more than my neighbor and therefore I use more bandwidth. Well, why shouldn't they? You know, your water company will discriminate against you too if you have a sprinkler system and your neighbor doesn't. What's wrong with that? Why shouldn't they be able to charge you more for your usage than the guy next door? They should. Verizon, Sprint, I mean, you pick the cell phone company, and unless you're willing to pay for, you know, unlimited data, you have a limit on what you can use each month. So that's where I get back to on this argument. And I always get hate emails and I don't understand what I'm talking about and blah, blah, blah. But to me, the whole net neutrality thing, it was a lose-lose situation. It was trying to force government controls on something that was working perfectly. Well, you know what, I'm paraphrasing Ronald Reagan, but he said something to that effect that if it moves, tax it. If it stops moving, regulate it. That's kind of what it gets down to for Democrats in a lot of these cases. So here's what they did. They voted to reinstate net neutrality, but guess what? It now goes to the House where it's going to die an immediate death because the House won't, they're not going to vote on that. Even if every Democrat voted for it and three rhino Republicans switched, there aren't enough votes in the House and Trump would never sign it. So it doesn't matter. So it's a political football that I think, as Denise properly responded to, most people eyes glaze over when they hear it. They don't really understand what it is or what it does. And yet Chuck Schumer seems to think, this is what Ed Markey said, the Democratic senator from Massachusetts. A key question for anyone on the campaign trail in 2018 should be, do you support net neutrality? You know what, Ed? You're a little out of touch because I don't think most people care. I really don't.
Yeah, key question is a little strong there.
Yeah, if you really think that's what the 2018 elections are going to turn on, it's no wonder that the Democrats are squandering their opportunity to retake the House. Very true. I mean, there's no getting around it. Besides, you don't have to go too far to find out what the Democrats' real motive is here. Go to cut number 3, please.
Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, saw his wealth increase by $275 million every single day, for a total increase in wealth of $33 billion in a four-month period. Meanwhile, thousands of Amazon employees are forced to rely on food stamps.
Those are crickets, in case you hadn't picked up on it. But Bernie Sanders is a populist. Bernie Sanders is a green envy guy. He's a, you should be angry because you haven't been given as much as Jeff Bezos earned. What have you created lately? Let me ask that. That's the question each of us needs to ask when we wake up every day. What did I create yesterday in return for my paycheck? And that's what it gets down to. Don't be jealous that Jeff Bezos is worth that much money, or Zuckerman, as you thumb through your Facebook feed today, that Zuckerman, you know, made $500 million while he was sitting in front of Congress testifying a month ago. Mm-hmm. Don't be jealous about that. He created a better mousetrap. People want to buy it. Guess what? He's rich. He did. That happens every day in America. Just because it hasn't happened to you, Bernie Sanders, is no reason to suggest that the federal government needs to Uber tax Jeff Bezos to give somebody else free college. That system has failed everywhere it's been tried. And yet he wants to, it's what he's going to run on again. It's part of the Democratic platform now. All you have to do is listen to Hillary, to Chelsea Clinton, to Hillary Clinton's daughter. Go to cut number 2. Listen.
She does not believe, though, that while working towards comprehensive immigration reform, we should make people wait, like the families that you're talking about, which is why she thinks it's so important to extend the Affordable Care Act to people who are living and working here.
You heard her right. She wants to give health care, subsidized health care, to illegal aliens. Because it's all about catering to the constituency that might vote for you. How many more votes can I buy today? That's where the left comes from in this country. 314-241-9797. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. We'll get to your phone calls. We've got Senator Jim Talent coming up after the top of the hour.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Hey, Chuck, welcome into the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Mark.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when we're looking at this whole net neutrality thing that the Democrats are pushing, what they're trying to do is target a specific market, which is the millennials, because they're losing, you know, they've lost most of the Trump voters. They're in the process of losing a lot of the minority vote as Trump's numbers increase with minorities, and they need to get out the people who typically vote Democrat if they can actually get them to vote. And
yeah.
That's what this whole thing is to try to get those millennials off the couch and into the voting booth in 18.
You know, I'd never thought of it that way, but you're right, because it this fires up a lot of millennials who perceive a right to internet service or free internet service or whatever, the access to internet service, and they're convinced that net neutrality gave that to them on a platter when I'm telling them that it didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great point, Chuck. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's always a fresh angle there that I haven't really thought about. But he's right, because most of the people who've engaged with me over this issue have been younger and who are convinced that somehow it's going to cost them more if there's not, because the Democrats portray net neutrality as evening the playing field. Well, let me remind you of who else always talked about that. Can I bring that up?
This isn't fair.
That's what Barack Obama was. This isn't fair. Remember what else did he used to tell us all the time about the fact that no matter what you do, here's the bottom line.
You didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Al Gore, right? Didn't he? He built the the internet, didn't he?
Yeah.
So ask him. But I'm thrilled that he brought that up because it's true. That's where it all stemmed from, and he may be right. It's a way to try to drive younger voters and convince them that somehow the Republicans are depriving them of something. The internet was doing just fine before the government came along. Hey, former Senator Jim Talent coming up at around 7:10. We'll talk about this this North Korea development. We'll be right back. Welcome back into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Plenty still to come. Top of the next hour, we're going to talk to Jack Devine, who is a veteran of the CIA. We'll get his thoughts on the Gina Haspel vote that's coming up and what she means to the agency and what that whole era was about right after 9/11. Right now, let's get to our next one. Senator Jim Talent joining us right now at Jim Talent on Twitter. You can go to bipartisanpolicy.org to learn more about that. Jim, how are you?
I'm fine, Mark. How are you guys?
I'm doing fine. You know, before we get into the international stuff with North Korea and all that, I just have a political question for you.
Sure.
Today is the one-year anniversary of the Bob Mueller investigation. And, you know, Rudy Giuliani seems to be putting a little bit of full court pressure on him to go ahead and give us your report. Let's see what you've got after 1 year and I'm sure millions of dollars of investigations. What's your take on that a year into this?
Well, I think it shows that Rudy's not afraid of anything he might say. you know, I think there's a point where we're entitled to say that if they have no evidence of collusion, and they have none, that's because there wasn't any, okay? So, you know, the idea of this investigation is either to find something or exonerate people. And I think the exoneration is coming. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but if they'd had anything, it would have leaked. I mean, who's kidding whom, right? So
right.
I do think it is time for him to wrap this thing up and to tell people what he's got, if he's got anything. And I never thought he had anything. Do I think the Russians interfere with our elections? Sure. That's dog bites man. They've been doing that for decades. It was a classic tactic of the Soviets. Others do the same thing. And once in a while, you know, we stick our nose in other countries' elections. But I've never believed there was any collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
I'm glad to hear you point that out, because the U.S. has certainly tried to interfere in Benjamin Netanyahu's last election.
Right.
I remember reading the stories about that. I don't know that you could claim it was collusion, but we tried to influence the outcome of that election against Netanyahu's interests.
Yeah, now we use, you know, tactics. I'm not trying to compare us or make us equivalent to the Russians or other countries that do this sort of thing. But, I mean, were they trying to interfere? What we're finding out, I mean, and this I'd really like to see, the House and the Senate are on this like, you know, ducks on June bugs, is what the FBI was doing. I mean, if you look at what that dossier triggered, and if that came at all from, you know, a Russian intelligence operation at all, then there's more evidence of the contrary, that they, you know, that they tried to get an investigation of President Trump's campaign. But anyway, whatever it is, it ought to come out. And I think the American people are ready to hear it and ready for this thing to end.
Yeah.
So I think Rudy's right.
Yeah, it's a great point. I appreciate your thoughts on that. Earlier this week, I had a friend on who lives in Israel. He lives in Jerusalem. He said about a 15-minute walk from the new embassy. And he was giving me a little different perspective on this problem down in Gaza compared to what we're getting in the mainstream media coverage on this.
It's terrible. I mean, it's as bad as anything I've ever seen. It really is. I'm sorry I interrupted your question.
No, go ahead. You're making my point.
It's terrible. Look, I do want to say a word about the embassy, but with regard to Hamas, this is standard procedure for Hamas. They're particularly whenever they're under pressure, and they're under pressure now because Iran is overextended all throughout the Middle East, and their economy is going south on them. So my guess is they're not providing as much support to Hamas, and their other sponsors, some of the Gulf states, have gone in the other direction. And so they're hard-pressed, and what they always do with this is they attack Israeli civilians, and that's what this was, that forces Israel to defend itself. Israel goes to incredible lengths to try and avoid any civilian deaths and to use the least amount of force it has to use. But then Hamas sticks civilians up front, and some of them get killed, unfortunately, and then they appeal to the Western press for sympathy, and they try and revive themselves that way. So it's standard procedure. They're doing the same thing again. And really, you know, it's if the press would be balanced in response to one of these things, it would be a major blow to Hamas. And I can't think of anything better for the people of Gaza than, you know, if they got rid of that movement, because it's just, it's a sorry, terrible place. You know, Israel is the only country that had an open border with Gaza, and they were trying to ship in, like, energy and that sort of thing, and Hamas prevented it, because they don't want that place to get better. I mean, it's just terrible. So, yeah, this is a standard procedure for them.
Well, and what a shame, really, how they've, I guess, willingly manipulated the mainstream media. I watched a CBS News report the other day where they were at a hospital in Gaza talking about the injured, and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, if they hadn't followed the orders of Hamas and rushed the border, there's a good chance they wouldn't have ended up in the hospital.
Well, yes, and look, Felix Frankfurter said about one of his colleagues on the Supreme Court one time, he said, experience goes through him without stopping. And I think that sometimes about some observers of the Middle East, I mean, how often does this have to happen before the, you know, the game plan becomes clear? So, you know, the Israelis have the right to defend themselves. Now, if people want to come forward and say, look, they don't have the right to exist, and therefore they don't have the right to defend themselves, at least that's an honest position. But to say that, you know, that they're trying, that they want this, that they're trying to hurt people, is just absolutely wrong. And, you know, you keep saying it over and over again, and then people keep reporting it this way.
Jim, we're talking to Jim Talent, a former Missouri senator with the bipartisan policy.org now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And North Korea. You know, I expected there would be bit of a roller coaster before this summit actually happened. What's your take over how North Korea's positioned this now, threatening to pull out?
It shows that the strategy is working. You know, I wrote a column about this. I think the summit is occurring because the Chinese have decided that North Korean nuclear program is causing things in the region that they, the Chinese, really don't like. That hurts their interest. And, you know, the Japanese are building up their defenses again. We're surging carriers to the Western Pacific. And the United States and South Korea have come even closer together in the last couple of years because of this threat. I mean, it's quite natural. And that's bad for the Chinese strategic interests. So I think they forced this guy to the table. So what we've done here is we found out what they want and how bad they want it. They don't want us working more closely together with the South Koreans. So therefore, that's what we ought to continue doing.
Yeah.
Unless and until the North Koreans actually do, not promise, but actually do what we want them to do with this program. I think the administration gets this. What John Bolton said about this, I think, is exactly right. So what we need to do now is to say, hey, if you don't like these military exercises, maybe you ought to get rid of your program. And when you've done that and you've showed us you've done it, then maybe we'll give you something that you want.
Yeah, it's a completely different approach than the U.S. has ever taken with them before, and you can see the results.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I said I want to say a word about the embassy. I always thought that was a good move, just the right thing to do. I mean, Jerusalem's the capital of Israel, and we put our embassies in the capital. But it's turned out, I think, to have a lot of benefits for us. It's reducing the isolation of Israel in the region. You know, the other countries are starting to send their embassies there as well. It's reaffirmed to the region that America will stand by its allies, which is hugely important in anything we want to do. So I think it was a relatively easy way of reversing the polarity in the Middle East. I give the administration a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see if this summit gets pulled off on the date that they've got in mind. It's almost like they're trying to delay for some reason.
Yeah, they may delay it. I don't think they're going to cancel it because they agreed, they offered this summit because they thought it was in their interest to have it.
Right.
Not because they want peace, okay? It's because they thought it was in their interest. And if they thought that, they still think that. And I think they're going to go ahead and have the summit. And if they don't, we go back to the strategy of continuing to pressure, and largely by signaling to the Chinese that things are happening in the region they don't like because of what their ally is doing. Okay,
yeah.
That's the way to solve this if it can be solved.
Jim, back here in wonderful Missouri politics, the L.A. Times has an article out this morning quoting Al Watkins, the attorney in this case for the ex-husband involved in the affair, claiming that the $120,000 payment that was made to him actually came from a powerful GOP donor. Any thoughts on how weird this situation gets every day?
I thought he said he didn't know where it came from.
He did say that initially.
Bags of money showed up and he didn't know. Yeah, this gets curiouser and curiouser. I have admired how the legislature's handled it. You know, I've been in this situation where the chief executive is under a huge cloud and you have to consider, you know, impeachment, and it is hard to do. And I think they're trying to do it in a workmanlike fashion, with a lot of integrity. So, you know, I'm waiting to see how that process plays out. I do think the governor needs to, in some form or other, and it may be a trial, it could be before the committee or something like that, you know, really put himself in a position where he explains what happened and he opens himself up to the toughest questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's coming in one context or another. You know, until I see it, I'm reserving judgment because, you know, I know that often the true story is not what you're, you know, hearing in the initial stages.
No, true. And, you know, I spoke with two Missouri senators yesterday on the show, and they both told me that they're pretty sure that there's going to be a vote for impeachment at some point during this special session. It almost seems at this point to be a foregone conclusion that there are folks in Jeff City who intend to take that vote one way or the other. So
yeah, I think they're going to move ahead with the process, certainly, and that's better intel than I have. I mean, I don't. It's not like I get up in the morning and start calling these people to find out what's going on. You know?
Understood.
And by the way, I don't typically read the L.A. Times, so but I'm glad you do.
Yeah.
Shows how informed you are, right?
And I appreciate that. But you know, I mean, I saw the headline, and I'm thinking, well, how in the world did the Los Angeles Times beat the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on that story? That's pretty amazing.
Well, that's a good question to put to somebody at the Post-Dispatch. Come on your program. I imagine the editors are asking that question right now to some of the reporters.
I suspect there's an interesting editorial meeting going on this morning at the Post.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
It might be. That's more your line than mine, though. You know?
Yeah, Jim, thanks so much for your time.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Have a great day. Appreciate that. Jim Talent there, at Jim Talent. And bipartisanpolicy.org if you want to read more of his thoughts on the North Korea and stuff. I have to ask the local Missouri question, though, because obviously he was the Missouri senator for a while and has been involved as a member of the House and the Congress anyway. And he understands how weird Missouri politics are. In case you missed that story, this is how strange things have gotten overnight. The Los Angeles Times, a reporter named Matt Pierce, breaks a story this morning saying that, according to Al Watkins, the $120,000 given to him was given to him in order to bring down Missouri's GOP governor, and it came from a wealthy Republican financier who wants to bring down Eric Greitens, who has a personal grudge of some sort against Eric Greitens and was willing to put up the money to get this story out there, which, you know, again, he's crediting Al Watkins with this information. He said, according to Al Watkins, that's what he's claiming. To me, Watkins has a credibility problem because first he said he didn't know where the money came from. Then he said it came from at least one payment from Scott Faughn, but he didn't know the source of it. And now suddenly he seems to know the source of it. And you're wondering, gee, what would have happened if he'd been dragged up into court under oath? What would we have found out? So I think eventually this information will come out. But let's assume for a moment that he's right. It speaks to a bigger problem here, folks.
I'd say.
Right? So that somebody, if follow the money, I said this earlier this morning, somebody was threatened by some of the policy changes that this governor wanted to institute. And Denise referenced this earlier, does Eric Greitens bear any responsibility for this? Absolutely. Because his affair, his lapse of judgment 3 years ago before he was elected opened the door to all of this. Mm-hmm. This financier, whoever he or she is, I'm assuming it's a he, whoever this person is, couldn't have influenced the media in the way that he did if this incident hadn't happened, if this explosive tape with the salacious allegations didn't exist, we wouldn't be where we are today. But ultimately, just that is setting that aside and accepting that as a given, you've got a situation where somebody for the measly sum of $120,000 is going to commit a coup in Missouri state government. They're going to remove a sitting governor and they're going to replace him with the lieutenant governor. I don't know Mike Parson very well. I can't speak to what kind of governor he's going to be. And I'm not suggesting he had anything to do with this, but that just shows you how easy it is in Missouri to do. And I guess the people that need to answer this question should be the legislators in the Missouri House who've doubled down since the criminal trial ended, since the prosecutor dropped the charges. They've doubled down and said, well, that doesn't matter. We're conducting our own investigation. We'll reach our own conclusions. That arrogance needs to be reconsidered given the fact that this story suggests this is everybody's been used here. Channel 4 has been used here. Every media outlet that picked this story up after Channel 4 broke it has been used here. They've been manipulated by someone, and here's my proof of that. This story about Eric Greitens was known by many people and many reporters when he was running for governor. Nobody went with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no victim. No, and no apparent crime committed other than the fact that there had been an affair. Why didn't it get reported before? It was shopped around and shopped around and shopped around until somebody put enough money behind the effort that it became news the day of the State of the State address in 2018. Think about that. And if you're a legislator in the state of Missouri about to convene an impeachment vote in special session, you need to think about how this situation has been manipulated and why before you take such a serious, serious step. 314-241-9797. What say you about what's going on with the governor in this LA Times report? I'll get to your phone calls and much more right after this.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
This little gimmick we ran at the end of the show yesterday about the Yanni thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. I you know what? I think that was a scam.
I agree.
That's what I had thought originally.
Because it was different tones and voices. I mean, it's completely different.
Here's my problem with it, though. I posted one of the videos and I got multiple responses on that video that were different. Like the same video.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. Really? The same video?
I'm assuming that when they, I guess that's what could have happened is they commented on something they had heard previous. But yeah, like the same post with the same video.
Some sort of social experiment that we fell for. I apologize
yes, I
for that.
I completely agree.
I think that's what that was.
I don't know, guys.
It was going viral for some reason. Everybody was talking about it.
Because it was something else to talk about.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
It started with some college student that wanted to know how to pronounce Laurel. And when she heard it, she heard Yanny or Yanny. And then she was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And tweeted it. And it just went crazy.
That sounds made up.
I need to come up with something
you
like
guys.
That.
Yeah.
We're so skeptical.
I know.
There's something behind this. We look like fools because we talked about it for an entire day.
There's some breaking news. Apparently, there's a water main break out near Page and Walton that you reported on. When I was a reporter down in Greenville, South Carolina, I should find the video and get it posted to the website. I don't know. I've got it at home somewhere. We get a call for a water main break, right? And we gushing 70 feet into the air. Well, we run out there with the TV crew only to find out that at the end of this 10-mile long line coming out of a water reservoir, a water main had broken. Mm-hmm. And where it broke, it was shooting straight onto a house. And the force was so great that it tore all of the shingles off the house. It tore a hole in the side of it. And we were there when the homeowner opened the front door and furniture was floating out of the house. Like, it filled up the inside of the house with water to like three or four feet. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's wild.
The amount of pressure that you can get off those lines, it was just unbelievable.
I mean, the pictures from this one in Overland right now are crazy. I mean, it's high.
Yeah. So if you're wondering why you can't take a shower this morning, you live in that area. Now you know. Now you know. You know, I saw this story, and I haven't gotten to it yet, but I need to mention it. For all of our talk about the dossier and where it came from and who started it, Devin Nunes suggested earlier in the week that there was a mole in the Trump campaign. The Daily Mail today has an interview with the former Fusion GPS boss who comments on a conversation he had with Christopher Steele in 2017, and he claims that Steele told him that the Bureau had a human intelligence source inside Donald Trump's presidential campaign organization, run at the time by none other than James Comey. Was this the insurance policy? Was this, you know, and here's the thing about it is if you really had somebody on the inside of the organization whose sole purpose was to find evidence of some wrongdoing or Russian collusion, just bear in mind that today marks the 12-month anniversary of Bob Mueller's investigation. So during the campaign, they had somebody on the inside. They were looking at Russian collusion. They were looking at Carter Page. They were looking at all these people. And they still don't have any evidence of two people getting together and saying, this is what we need to do to defeat Hillary Clinton. They just can't accept that she was just a horrible candidate and she lost.
Neither can she.
No, she can't. She just needs to get over that completely.
I kept my cool, aided by a lifetime of dealing with difficult men trying to throw me off.
Buildings.
I did, however, grip the microphone extra hard.
All right, we're going to get to a break. 314-241-9797. In her own words, right?
She said it. She sure did.
As said by Hillary Clinton.
That was some weird shit.
I'm just saying. We'll get to your phone calls after this.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
You can't look into a crystal ball and tell when a crazy person is going to do something crazy. You can't. You have to be prepared for it. And what I've said all along is the only way to do that is to have more good guys with guns in schools. And I'm not saying that every teacher needs to carry a gun. But this example up in Illinois yesterday was a great example of why you need to have at least a school resource officer or two armed in every school. So they've now charged a 19-year-old named Matthew Milby with firing a gun in his high school in Illinois. And they find out that he was a bullied student who got kicked off the football team for smoking pot. And he came to school with a gun and started shooting, and after firing a couple of bullets, the school resource officer, a hero named Mark Dallas, fired back, and he wounded the guy, which brought the incident to a dead stop. He didn't kill him, but he wounded him. Apparently, the guy showed up to fire at seniors who were getting ready to rehearse for graduation. His mother has no idea where he got the gun. But again, a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. That's it right there. Point made. Tim, thanks for the call.
Hi. I heard you say there was no evidence of collusion, but we have Roger Stone working with WikiLeaks. We have Papadopoulos. We have the June meeting with Manafort and Donald Trump Jr. I mean, I don't know what you apparently haven't been reading the news.
Well, of course I read the news, Tim. Tim, what are you talking? Of course I read the news. Roger Stone did business with somebody whose last name was Russian. That's evidence of Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump getting together and deciding that Russia is going to back him to win the election. I'll guarantee you Vladimir Putin would rather have dealt with Hillary Clinton, who would have adopted a Barack Obama kind of foreign policy, which is draw a red line and back up from it. He didn't want to deal with Donald Trump. There is no proof of collusion. Wow. These people, I'm telling you what. 314-241-9797. Next hour, we're going to talk to Jack Devine, a veteran of the CIA, about Gina Haspel and what's going on with that case. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Tom Homan, who I am sad to say is stepping down. He's been the acting ICE director, and he's getting ready to retire. He's basically about to retire anyway, and he agreed to step in and take things over. I don't know who they're going to replace him with. I was kind of hoping for Sheriff David Clark, but apparently he's not interested. Get to see him with that cowboy hat down on the border, kicking some butt. But I don't know. I love this guy, though, but he's right. So illegal immigration is at a 45-year low, and you know one reason for that? Because we used to have, under the previous administration, this big blinking neon sign that said open at the southern border. And that's been turned off under the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. They've made it clear that we need immigration reform in terms of our immigration policy. I hate it when they argue that we don't like immigrants. It has nothing to do with not liking immigrants. Most of us are immigrants. It's illegal immigration that's the problem. Hey, welcome back into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Glad that you're with us. Still much more to come. We're going to get to former House Speaker Tim Jones, talk about what's going on in the legislature later this hour. Right now, let me get to my guest. He is Mr. Jack Devine. He's the president and founding partner of the Arkin Group and also a 32-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency. Jack, welcome into the program.
Good to be on the program.
Well, it's good to have you on. Had a chance to listen to a bit of your interview with my friend Chris Arps and Tony Colombo this past weekend, and I told my producer, Trish, I'd love to have him on sometime because he's been involved at so many different levels of the CIA around the world the last, 32 years you served?
32 years. Loved every day. Wow, yeah. That's an exaggeration. Bad days. But I've worked those out of my mind.
Yeah. What's your take on the status of that organization these days? I mean, a lot of people have talked about the fact that all of the criticism that's been focused on the clandestine services and all of that has hurt morale and it's hurt their ability to do their jobs.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that comment on things because they think that's what's going on. But my experience has been the agency is really a composite of America. Most of the people in there leave their politics at home. They're average Americans and at least a sense of economic and social milieu. But they're all patriots. They're all committed. They put their lives on the line. And I've seen many of those stars added to the wall at Langley over the years. I think one of the things that the CIA rank and file on, as I said, you leave your politics aside. They want strong leadership. They want to be able to do what they think needs to be done to complete the policy as designated by, the president and coordinated with Congress. So I think there's no doubt there'll be a mixture of feelings inside the CIA, but my guess is there's a huge mission out there. There's a lot of enemies, and they're being given the leeway to go do what needs to be done. So I think there's a great distortion about morale at CIA. I think the FBI has another problem.
Yeah.
I hope we get that straightened out because we need the FBI.
That's a good point. What do you mind if I ask, what year did you leave the CIA?
I left in 2000. I came to New York and set up a company.
So you have
right before 9/11.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. So you were there. You were in New York about the time 9/11 happened.
I was down at the near the base of the Twin Towers when the plane set. So I remember it well.
So in terms of the world changed that day for everybody. It did. It changed the way the United States operated internationally as well. And that speaks to the vote that we're going to see on Gina Haspel and some of the comments by members of Congress who were critical of her for the policies that she carried out, as a station chief at the time. But it was a different time in America, correct?
Right. No, she's the real thing. I mean, if you look at her pedigree, she grew up as an ops officer and served through numerous command positions. And on 9/11, she actually had just returned from abroad and literally walked over to the counterterrorism center and volunteered to start working there and set aside everything else. So she's a committed person. Unfortunately, when we look at the political process today, it's so politicized that I think people are blinded by politics. And I thought she did a superb job. I don't know if you saw the hearing, but you know, you look with great sensitivity if you're a CIA person, and you know, I thought it was flawless. Now, I am happy the two Democrats on the Intelligence Committee are voted for her. I mean, I think, you know, there's a point in time where we have to go back to a bipartisan approach to foreign policy and to how we conduct business and tackling with our enemies. And I'm glad we just didn't get a straight up and down, and I hope that happens on the floor. I'd like to see more Democrats vote their conscience, because when you look at it, I think there's the criticism of hers is largely a ruse. And I would point out that she was not the chief in the station. She was actually a relatively minor officer running or in charge of a program, just a program that was being wound up. I would say she was more, if I were put it in military terms, a rank of a major, not only not a colonel or like a colonel, but certainly not a general, the architect of the program. So this has been hugely blown out of proportion, and I think it's most unfortunate, although I think the outcome from where I sit, that I'm not down there counting heads in Washington, but I think the country, you know, the country would support her if we were put to a vote.
Yeah, I think you're right. And tell me, we're talking to Jack Devine, who spent 32 years at the CIA. You know, the White House tends to toot its own horn sometimes, but I've heard people comment that she's possibly the most qualified candidate out there to run the CIA. Would you agree with that?
I know her very well. This isn't like I'm sitting here in New York and don't know her. I've watched her through her career. So when I tell you that she is the top candidate, you say, "Great, Jack, you got to give me a list of five people that have the same credentials inside the CIA." I'd have to tell you, Mark, look, this is, I think this is it. There's a gap. She's been uniquely put in certain positions that there's no one that can match, being the deputy director, chief of worldwide operations, having served in some of our major stations and some of our frontier stations. So that's a resume to beat. I really defy anyone to come up and show me a resume. And I have a pretty good sense of all the potential contenders within the agency. If you go outside, I think we lose a lot. I think this is time to have a career professional in the CIA facing all of the intelligence challenges we have.
Well put, and from someone who had a storied career in the CIA. In fact, Mr. Devine wrote a book about it called Good Hunting, an American Spymaster Story, and I'm sure you can still find it. It was a New York Times bestseller just a few years ago, right?
Right, in the espionage area.
Yeah.
I'm writing another one, by the way. So have me back in about a year, God willing.
We will do that.
We're lucky to have Gina. I think this country's going to be stronger for it.
Well, I appreciate your time. Jack Devine, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
You bet. 314-241-9797.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Spending. Spending! That's what we want!
I'm just trying to summarize what Rand Paul said to you there a minute ago. If we don't stop the runaway spending, interest will be the largest line item in our budget. How difficult is that to understand? But folks, that's not the approach of the left in this country. And you may consider yourself a Democrat. Do you consider yourself a left-wing Democrat? I mean, that's a legitimate question. I have a lot of friends who consider themselves, well, you know, I'm liberal socially, but I'm a fiscal conservative. Well, you might want to disassociate yourself with that party. Listen to Keith Ellison. We've already had Bernie Sanders trying the envy line this morning, claiming that Jeff Bezos of Amazon is too rich, which means we need to confiscate some of his wealth and redistribute it to somebody else. I'm sorry, Bernie. We don't live in a communist society. You don't get to do that. And now Keith Ellison, who's still the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee, comes up with this one. Cut number 12. Please. That's all right.
Under the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act, it became required that the publicly traded companies would have to report the ratio between CEO pay and the median worker. It took a while, about 5 years or more, for the Securities Exchange Commission to promulgate a rule, but they finally did. So now we have a data set of about 225 publicly traded companies.
Yeah, let me define what he's talking about there. He wants to regulate the pay structure of private companies. So companies that fall under the regulation of Dodd-Frank, which would be, banking companies and others that, handle finances. He wants the government to step in and regulate how much money people can make. That's the Democratic Party of today. So the chances, and you know how much I agree with Rand Paul, chances of us slowing down that out-of-control spending short of some sort of a coup are probably unrealistic. Hey, Lewis, you're on the radio. Go ahead. Oh, Lewis,
no, Lewis just
hung up as I went to him. He hung up on me.
Where'd you go, Lewis?
He must have figured I summed up what he was talking about. Actually, he was talking about Russia and collusion, or the lack of, since today's the one-year anniversary of the Mueller investigation. Mm-hmm. Aren't you tired of hearing about it?
Absolutely.
It feels like it's been longer than a year.
It kind of does feel like talking. It's been longer.
It kind of surprised me that it was only a year. Feels like it's been
Obviously, they've been investigating it longer than that, but Mueller didn't get, believe it or not, he didn't get appointed till 12 months ago. and millions of dollars later and hundreds of thousands of dollars in billable hours to a lot of attorneys, and they found nothing except that Paul Manafort might have done some illicit banking 10, 12 years ago.
Well, and didn't they find that before Mueller even got on board? Like, I think that they knew about the Manafort stuff before Mueller was.
Yeah, and he even questioned whether it was in the scope. I mean, that's the problem. What is the scope? The scope's kind of, there is no scope. There are no lines. I mean, he can just go wherever he wants. It's out of control. I'm with the folks from the White House now, including former Mayor Giuliani. It's time to wrap this thing up. Show us your hand. Show us what you got. Pass your recommendations on to the Assistant Attorney General and see what happens. We'll battle it out from there. 314-241-9797. Former Speaker Tim Jones going to get bougie with us when we come back.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
You know, it's weird because when I do that political payoff announcement, I feel like I'm at a spelling bee. Like, can you use that in context?
Right.
Because we'll have people call in here after I do those, and they'll say, I didn't understand the word that he said. Could you spell that for me?
Spell it out.
Field. I mean, how many? I guess it could be F-E-E-L. I don't know. Maybe I don't enunciate properly.
I think you do. Just
you got
fine.
It.
I kind of get that whole, like, password vibe. Remember the game show Password?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and the password is?
The password. Field. All right, let me get to our guest, please. Speaker Tim Jones, good morning, my friend. How are you?
Bad and bougie.
Speaker Tim Jones, who I guess is at some resort in Arizona. Is that where you are?
Mark, it's for the children.
Okay, understood.
Nice try.
I wonder if they're...
Bad and bougie.
Hello, everybody.
The girls love that little clip that they got from me.
Oh, I know they do. I know they do.
Yeah. Is it sexist of me to call them girls? I should have said the ladies love that little drop that you gave them.
I'll take either.
So what are you up to out in Arizona? Is it nice and cool out there?
Mark, it's a dry heat. Mark, actually, I'm out here. It actually is, in some ways, for the children. So, Mark, I'm out here in the Valley of the Sun at Phoenix. We're 2 hours behind. They don't do daylight savings time because they think 12 hours of 100-degree sunshine is enough.
That's better.
They don't add an hour to that. So we're 2 hours behind. But, no, it's been a good week out here. Arizona, we'll talk about this, Mark, a lot more, actually, as we get closer to November.
Okay.
Arizona is probably going to be one of, if not the biggest battleground states this election cycle. They've got a U.S. Senate seat at the top of the ticket with the retirement of Jeff Flake, thank God. They've got their governor up for re-election, and he's embattled to an extent. Not like our governor, but, you know, more on policy stuff.
Yeah.
We've got some major ballot issues, and that's why I'm out here, Mark. There's an effort by the teachers' unions to recall a very significant education reform bill the legislature passed a year ago. And so Arizona is way ahead of the country, definitely way ahead of Missouri, on educational choice for parents. They've got things like charter schools statewide. They've had 25 years. They've got open enrollment. They've got an education savings account program, like an HSA. And so parents out here are really in charge of their children's education, unlike Missouri and some other more closed-minded states. And so there's an effort to pull back one of those pieces of legislation I mentioned, a recall, kind of like our right to work recall, very much.
Yeah.
And so I was out here doing a lot of focus groups this week, talking to Arizonans about where are they on things. And I'll tell you, Mark, there's a lot, you can just tell with people's reactions to things. I heard this before I got here. They said a lot of the left-wing, left-coast money is pouring into Arizona to influence people's opinion. So a lot of money from George Soros and Steyer is coming in from California, which is, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump away here. And mm-hmm. So I saw that. I did six focus groups, and I definitely saw those impressions having an effect. And so folks in the common sense conservative world out here are going to have to do a lot of work to kind of reshape what is the truth about educational choice. So Arizona is going to be a huge battleground as we approach November.
Well, it's good to know. You know, let me switch gears here for just a minute. Every day on this program, I talk about the fact that Donald Trump gets things done, and he's gotten a lot accomplished, and he deals with North Korea, and he deals with Iran, and then he you know, starts dealing with prescription drugs, and he just keeps ticking things off. I mean, he's constantly in motion. One thing that kind of gets overlooked is something that John King on CNN pointed out for his listeners. It's probably made them very uncomfortable. Go to cut 24.
When the president was on Capitol Hill yesterday meeting with senators, one thing he asked for, more confirmations of his judicial picks. This is an area, doesn't get a ton of attention, where the president is making a lot of progress, and it's an area where his conservative base is very happy with the president. So far, 38 judges have been confirmed, not including Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. So you could make that 39 if you count the Supreme Court, but 21 Court of Appeals judges approved, confirmed under the Trump presidency. 17 U.S. District Court judges confirmed already during the Trump presidency. How's that match up? Well, let's take a look. This is the Court of Appeals, the president running ahead of the five presidents who served before him.
Woo woo. I mean, one more reason to wake up every morning and say a prayer that you don't have to say the words Madam President.
Absolutely, Mark. And, you know, first of all, as a top line observation, CNN has done a lot of this kind of reporting lately, haven't they? I think it's, yeah, it's like Donald Trump has shocked and awed them into reporting some of the truth, right? We had the story last week where they're shocked that the congressional generic ballot is within the margin of error. They've had a couple other stories where they're like, you know, you may not like the guy, but he's getting XYZ done. And this is one of those things, Mark, that flies under the radar because, you know, it's not as interesting to talk about as maybe creepy porn lawyer Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels, but it's having a greater effect on our nation and for a long time ahead for our children and our grandchildren, because let's remember, these federal court appointments are for life. And so if Donald Trump is putting younger, more conservative-minded judges on the judiciary, they're going to be around a long time. And where do your Supreme Court judges come from? A lot of time from the farm team of the circuit and district court level. So, Mark, just another example, and we could go on for another, you know, half an hour to an hour about all the accomplishments. The mainstream media largely ignores them. So all the things that are positively happening in the country, like the economic boom and the historic low unemployment, well, that's just Barack Obama's legacy, you know, having its effect. So that's what they say there. Anything they don't like about the country, they ignore it. But Donald Trump is doing so much, from deregulation to these judges on the courts to tax reform to, you know, bringing North Korea to dragging them, kicking and screaming to the table. ISIS has been largely dismantled. I spoke with someone last week about that and said, yeah, it's true. They're still a problem, but they're more like Al-Qaeda now. They're kind of this ragtag terrorist group. They don't have a caliphate anymore. They're not as dangerous. We got to keep an eye on them. We got to keep up the maximum pressure that Trump follows versus the leading from behind and strategic patience of the failed Obama years.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. You know, I'm guessing here closer to home, there was a very uncomfortable editorial meeting at the Post-Dispatch this morning. They got scooped on a story by the LA Times. So the LA Times has a story out this morning claiming that Al Watkins is now saying that the $120,000 that was given to him was given to him from a wealthy Republican with an axe to grind against Greitens who wanted to bring down Missouri's governor.
Yeah, Mark, look, as I've said, I'm very disappointed in everybody that we're at this situation. You know, the governor made some major mistakes and missteps before he even decided to run for office, which maybe should have gone into his thinking, that's put himself in this place now.
So, right.
But at the risk of you know, so in not defending him, though, that doesn't mean that everybody on the other side of the equation has license to then act improperly. Two wrongs don't make a right. So what's been interesting is the local reporting on this has been so incredibly one-sided. Nobody cares at the Post about anybody else's nefarious motives. And it seems like whatever anybody else wants to do or say, then that means justifies the ends, because they've hated Eric Greitens from day. They've hated Eric Greitens when he had none of these problems, and they still hate him now. And so they've never liked the guy. They've always wanted him out. Same thing with some, and I will say not all Republicans in the state, but there's a few bad actors. Definitely on both sides of the aisle that have been just wanting to take this guy out from day one. And why is that? Because he is a reformer as well. Education reform, tax reform, labor reform, especially tort reform. So a lot of people have a lot of motives. I just wish there'd be a little more fair reporting about the motives of these people and not acting like it's so entirely one-sided. You know, that being said, Eric Greitens does have an ever-escalating amount of scandals that keep coming out. And it's just going to be – it's bad for everybody who calls themselves a Republican. But, you know, how about we have a little bit more honest reporting about the entire global scale of this thing?
Greatest quote in this article, they quoted a TV interview Scott Faughn did back in 2007 after he left office in Poplar Bluff. Because of being convicted of forging checks. He was quoted as saying, in my community, if you're rich enough, if you're powerful enough attorney, a powerful enough newspaper publisher, and corrupt enough, you can take out just about anybody, end quote.
Yeah, and you saw, Mark, the news this week that the Jefferson City Capitol Press Corps just finally decided this week that Scott Faughn's not a journalist. Oh, what a news flash. You know?
That's a good point. Hey, Tim, we're out of time, my friend. Keep it bougie out there in Arizona.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Thanks, ladies. I'll talk to you again.
All right. Tim. See you, buddy. At Speaker Tim Jones there on the Twitter. And, of course, the Tim Jones Show on Sunday nights here from 7 to 9 on FM News Talk 97.1, 314-241-9797.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
CNN trying to make something out of those transcripts they released from the Senate, which Donald Trump Jr. didn't say anything different than what he's been saying, that, yeah, I took the meeting because we thought there might be something to it, and it was boring. There was we didn't do anything.
I don't know what else they want.
But we didn't offer her $6 million to go make up some stuff and bring it to us in the form of a dossier that we could hand over to the FBI. I guess we could have done that, but we didn't do that. This thing has just reached the point of silliness with the mainstream media. 1 year to go today, Bob Mueller takes over this investigation. 1 year later, after spending millions of dollars, there's no evidence of collusion, which is what he was charged with finding. Much more evidence of collusion between Hillary Clinton and the DNC and Russia than there ever was between anybody with the Trump campaign, including the idiot Carter Page and anybody else who might have inadvertently met with somebody they shouldn't have. Collusion means you work together with someone to get something done, and there's no evidence of that. It's a waste of time, and I think the American people are tired of it.
Think so.
We need to move on.
You need to get your head out of your butt, focus on the real issues.
That's what you need to do. I'm just telling you. Hey, listen, we're going to have a big show tomorrow. Big show Friday. This is going to be huge. You know what Donald Trump would say that.
Trump here. This is going to be huge.
Tomorrow we're going to have a member of the legislature on who's talking about what he sees as some unfairness in this special session going on in Jeff City regarding the governor. All of that plus Josh Hawley plus Austin Peterson tomorrow on the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Get more at 971talk.com.